Okay, now we need to move on to digital reporting. It is presented by Thomas Thompson-Smith. Welcome.
Hi.
Great, thank you very much for making the time in the agenda to hear a little bit about the project that we're running here in the Financial Reporting Lab. So for those of you who have not come across the Financial Reporting Lab, probably worth just highlighting what we are and what we do. So we're part of the Financial Reporting Council here in the UK, and we're really focused on trying to improve the quality of disclosures and reporting by companies, by working with companies and investors to try and understand the needs of investors and how best those might be presented, and working with companies to try and promote what would be best practice and therefore work in the interest of investors. So we have quite a wide range of projects that we work on. So some are governance disclosures, some are accounting disclosures, and some are about corporate reporting more in general. And I guess this project that we're working on at the moment falls more into that kind of overall general delivery of corporate reporting information and corporate reporting communication. So just to give you a bit of background in terms of the project, it's a longer term project that the FRC has committed to undertake. So it's looking at how reporting is adapting to technology and trying to understand how technology can work in the best interest of both companies and investors to deliver the right types of information and in the right ways and in the most kind of useful ways. And so the project started a couple of years ago, and we did the first piece of the project was called Digital Present, and that was really focused on sort of how companies present information to the investment community currently, and that looked at things like the presentations, the webcasts, the annual reports, investor presentations, etc., and tried to identify what worked and what didn't work for investors, and identify some sort of short-term, you know, kind of low-hanging fruit in terms of ways that it could be improved quite easily to try and enhance the usability of it. So, in terms of what we learned in the first project, we learned that many of the mediums that companies were using for reporting didn't really have a high uptake from investors, and we tried to understand why that was in some of the instances. We found that from the information that's delivered by the company, actually PDF was very well received from investors. And when we tried to understand why that was, and it wasn't about it being the best, it wasn't about it really being, you know, the closest to paper, but it was about a mixture of benefits that represent kind of paper reporting, but also digital reporting. So the fact that you can search the document, the fact that it has a boundary around it, these were things that were deemed to be useful. So, thinking a bit more widely about the kind of underlying attributes, what we wanted to do in this next project is take that same kind of concept of thinking about what qualities of information and what qualities of the kind of digital delivery are important both to those preparing the information but also those consuming the information, and then consider how the technologies that are kind of currently being developed and will be being developed for corporate reporting best match up with those sets of attributes. So in terms of the focus of the project, we are focusing on information that is prepared by the company, that is directed at the investor, and that is delivered digitally. So that is the annual report, but that also covers things like sustainability reports and other items. So what we're trying to do at the moment is really establish the attributes and qualities that are important to those who are using the information. And then we'll be comparing those to the different technologies. So we'll be looking at some of the kind of different technologies and technology-enabled trends to consider which of those best meet investor needs and whether actually there's a combination of various technologies that work in the best interests of investors and companies. So just to give you some highlight as to some of the things that we've learned so far. So we undertook a survey as part of the project. And so the idea of the surveys really are to try and understand at a beginning level what attributes are important, and then the next part of the project, which is sort of lots of qualitative in-depth interviews with investors, expand and try and understand what those mean in practice. So it just gives you a flavour of some of the things that are seen as important. And so when we asked what would be important for the future in terms of digitally delivered corporate reporting information, searchability came out as the number one useful attribute for that information. So something that people wanted, it was the ability to search. Downloadability into models was also important, and there was an aspect around portability. So those were the kind of top three attributes. And I guess one interesting insight, so we asked preparers what they thought would be the most important for investors as well, and those three are consistent across the two sets. Although it's perhaps no surprise that when we asked auditors, they thought assurance was more important.
Can I ask, what do you mean by portable?
So, it's a good question. It's one that we try and expand in the interview stages, so really trying to push down a level and understand what that means, because quite often we find the attributes mean different things to different people. But at a high level, what we're talking about there is the ability to take a copy of that corporate reporting information, have it, and use it on multiple devices and multiple settings. And so, I think it's quite often seen as quite useful from an investor perspective to have a copy which you know has not changed, and certainly when we're talking about things on the web, for example, that's quite a difficult quality to have. We've also asked preparers what attributes they think are most important for themselves, and so that's really around kind of production of the information, so then being able to kind of produce it on a timely basis, that it's not overly costly, and that it can support multiple kind of formats of reporting. And so, again, not particularly surprising, and what we find actually with many of these digital aspects, actually a lot of it is quite common sense, because it's about how people use information and being able to rely and trust the information. We also have, one of the things that we have also asked through the survey, and I'd be very interested to get your thoughts on this as well, is what areas of technology we should perhaps be thinking about in terms of being important for reporting in the future. And so, and I believe you guys have the slides. Slide 9 gives the responses that came back through the survey. So, of the investors who answered our survey, which I will say is not a super high number, but augmented reality and virtual reality seems to be extremely as an important or interesting technology.
Well, how would that work? We already live in a virtual reality. So.
It's a really interesting question. I mean, and it's one that we hope to understand a bit more how it might work in practice. But there are ways that it could work, and perhaps it sort of reflects a little bit about. So when we speak to investors in general across the lab, the face-to-face managements with meetings or the on-site visits, they're still super important. And actually, even though in theory they shouldn't really give any additional information, they do, because it's about the quality of interaction and it's about the kind of gut feel of what you see. And so perhaps augmented reality and virtual reality is a technology solution to deliver some of that in the future. I mean, that's a potential.
But it's a broader, so you really talk about corporate reporting rather than financial reporting. It's a much broader area.
So I'm struggling with what, in this context, people are thinking about when we're talking about virtual reality. You hinted it back to, you hinted it back to the interactions about, direct one-on-one. The reason we do that is because when somebody's telling you something, you can gauge. There are a whole bunch of soft signals that go out.
Yeah.
What is the thinking about? What are people thinking about when they're talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, we're at the beginning of the interview stage, so it's where we're really probing. And when we look at our previous project, one of the things that we found in terms of things like videos, actually, is that people really liked to understand the body language. They felt that they got some body language out there, and it's these softer signals that you pick up through the through the medium can sort of fall into the similar. So, I mean, I have a question as to how virtual reality would work, and it's something that we are exploring. I mean, I think I can see it more in terms of things like virtual rounds of factories, looking at the supply chain, those types of storytelling aspects rather than some of the delivery, but it's an interesting area, and whether you would need a virtual auditor to say that the information is virtual reality.
It sounds like a drug stash down there.
I'm given what you just said, I can make a guess, but I think it's a little bit in the guess would be, and they have systems where mechanics can look at an engine, they have a screen, they can see not only the schematics, but they have a whole bunch of other information that's coming in. And so it would be interesting, at least in theory, and I've got a whole bunch of problems where you'd never do this, but I'll give you the theory at least. It would be interesting if you could do a virtual trip of a mine. Mm-hmm. And the reason I pull out a mine is because they're typically difficult access. There are safety considerations, which mean that you have to be very careful when you bring people through. And because of that, it deploys a tremendous amount of resources. The problem is that, and I'll just touch on the aspect. For a lot of these applications, it would be just simpler to grab the person and pull them instead of creating a trip that allows you to go and see. You'd have to have, so in theory, for the moment, let's say a trip of a plant where you can walk into any place, and in fact walk into places that you wouldn't be able to walk in individually, maybe, but then from a, and this theme will come up, there's a cost generation issue behind this, which I'll touch later.
But I guess one of the benefits potentially is, and you're right in saying it's extremely costly, and it's extremely costly to do the trips, but being able to do it once in the kind of virtual reality world, then opening up to 1,000 different investors, for example, it might, there might be a kind of democracy of the information. Is that in that way?
Sorry, I really enjoyed my trips to the issues we invested in. But what really made it very valuable that I could ask 1,000 questions. And I could look under the machine and see where the steel was coming from, and they were independent, and ask 1,000 questions. Look and feel and sense and ask questions. And I'm afraid that the virtual reality, it will be like a movie, it will be to some extent insightful, but no replacement whatsoever for asking 1,000 questions, because that makes, and those questions individually, none of them are sensitive, it's just how do I understand what this company is all about, how do they add value, and I don't see this as a replacement for that. I don't mind companies making videos of their products, and that's helpful as well. No replacement for asking 1,000 questions.
And maybe that's where where it is. I mean, when we asked companies, preparers, actually, video they thought was more important, and And there's an aspect of storytelling, there's an aspect of them being able to control the entire message through video. And so, you know, virtual reality, augmented reality may be a sort of halfway house between them being able to control the full story and you having some access to it. But I imagine it's never going to replace, you know, fully or to a large extent, kind of being able to see the whites of their eyes and talking to them.
Dennis?
Yeah, I'm still about the scope. So are you looking at different media to suit different reporting needs, or are you ultimately going to zoom in on financial reporting, or what's going to hesitate to use the word scope, but where is it going to in terms of your end solution or end ideas?
So one of the things we're hoping with the attributes, and we're exploring with the attributes, is whether there's a kind of a consistent level of attributes that go across all the different mediums. So, you know, being able to know that the information is reliable, or having, you know, an understanding of the level of assurance that's been that comes up through that piece of information. Seems like it's important no matter what the information is and no matter how it's delivered. And so we're trying to understand that, but when we come to the underlying technologies themselves, so things like XBR tagging, blockchain, etc., they're going to be more specifically focused on individual types of delivery of information. So, you know, tagging of technology is obviously more focused at the moment on the financial statements.
But users will have different needs, not only in terms of financial, but also we discussed, you know, site visits, interviews. So how's it going to map in? Because we're here at the ISB, are you ultimately going to develop something which will be more covering the financial reporting needs of the users? So that'll be kind of my question. Is that the idea when you look at the big picture of media and the big picture of needs?
Yeah. So it's trying to understand what those different needs are and whether the different technologies have different, you know, work better for different groups of different stakeholders who are looking for those different pieces of information. I mean, what we're trying to do in terms of our overall outcome is to generate discussion from the companies and get some insight as to, I guess, the way things might go and what might work for those different stakeholder groups, because obviously we're going through a period, and certainly in the UK as much as anything else, we're going through a period of regulatory change, potential future regulatory change in terms of what types of information delivered, when they're delivered and how they're delivered. And so we hope to get some understanding through this process that will then feed into those kind of policy setting.
Mario?
Yeah, we just joked about the virtual auditor, but I think this is going to potentially become a really, really serious issue, because I think the sort of things that we just described, I agree with Robert, they would be very useful, but they also have the potential to be really, really misleading and to really, really increase the gap between the front half of the annual report and the back half of the annual report. Because you'd have to be very, very clear as to, you know, exactly what the status of, you know, the mine or the factory or the real estate is at the moment relative to what you're showing in that video, because all these things change all the time. So, I mean, part of the reason for me, for example, if I was invested in a real estate company that owns malls, to take a virtual tour around the mall is to get a feel for how attractive this could potentially be to the people who actually do their shopping there. And so if that virtual thing has an anchor investor that hasn't moved in yet, or, you know, it doesn't show me that certain parts of the mall are currently not usable or are looking really
selective
ugly or the, you know, something like that. I have to say, normally I'm actually not one of these people who want every single number audited, because I think a lot of times management would not lie maliciously about the supplemental information that they give you on top of the primary financial statements. But here, I mean, this really lends itself to abuse, and I mean, even if they're not looking to abuse it, it can be very, very misleading.
Yeah, I think one of the kind of key themes that are coming out as we're talking to people is understanding the level of assurance that is around a piece of information. So that be that external assurance, be that sign-offs, be that, you know, from internal. And so obviously here in the UK we have a kind of concept of fair balance and understandable, for example, how, you know, looking at whether that virtual reality version has is fair, balanced, and understandable. Those are all very, very tricky questions. So, you know, it seems like understanding the assurance and understanding the context of the information, i.e., you know, it was as at this day, this is what this looked like, for example, seem to be important if that information is ever going to be usable or ever going to be trustable.
Mitch?
This is the problem that there's too much virtual reality in the financial state.
Virtual, not reality.
That's the problem. You want more virtual reality? Okay, fine. Couple things from on the electronic point of view. Love it when companies are providing their financial statements in Excel format, so not just a PDF, but things that we can really download and manipulate. KPIs, huge. You know, I know that those aren't required, but certainly encourage, allow for comparability and understanding, allow me to tell the story of the company, where I was taking a video through a mall, let them tell me the story. I don't need them to tell me their story in that way to sell it. But the other thing that would be really great would be in the electronic delivery of information, if you had hyperlinks that allowed you to drill down to the summary items in a financial statement, like other income, click on that, bang, it takes you directly to the section in the financials. Long-term debt, click on it, bang, I can see the capital structure. You know, that kind of thing, where it's really a bit more interactive. There can be so much information there that it would be difficult to interact with a static document in that way, but dynamically, I mean, that, you know, you can do a little bit of that in Bloomberg sometimes, but if companies can report the financials that way, it would be to take it right into the MD&A, right to those items, and you can quickly very, very helpful. The other thing I wanted to say was that I'm attached to a group called AFME, and they have been part of a group that's been working on a dirty little secret in the high yield world, which is that accessing financial statements requires passwords, which is just it's ID and password. You have to register with the company, get an ID and a password to access their financial statements. These are not public companies, but they are public companies because they have public bonds and they're trading in the market. Raises big issues about what is material non-public information as well. You know, and sometimes they don't give you the ID and the password if you're not an actual bond owner. So I gotta show my, you know, it's an outrage, right? For various reasons. Undermines transparency, liquidity, all these kinds of things. But it's fairly common in European high yield, less so in US high yield. There are a couple companies from time to time. So I don't know that the IFRS there's anything we can do about that. I don't. If there was some way to make it say that if you want to report an IFRS and you must require that it has to be public, it would be fantastic. Yeah. So and of course everyone's going to want IFRS, and that would, the companies will tell you, it's like, well, for competition reasons we don't want our competitors to see we're doing. You know, it's the acronym for balance sheet. That's BS. But it's, you know, it's just, it's a false truth, so those are my thoughts.
And perhaps just a response to a couple of those. So in terms of attributes, certainly we had open kind of access to information, and sort of accessibility is one that we've heard from others as well, and I think that, you know, fundamentally
how important that is.
It has a real transparency, you know, is super important.
No excuse for that in this day and age.
No. And you know, it being freely available, so not necessarily behind any kind of tables or anything, as well as being kind of, you know, publicly available, seems to be quite important. And one perhaps question or clarification for the,
sure,
in terms of the downloads. And so when we looked at the, in our first project, we asked people or companies about the Excel downloads, and generally their response was, actually, nobody ever downloads them. And when we did a little bit of investigation, we were asking investors, actually, a lot of that was about it being focused at the wrong time. So, you know, companies would put out the Excel downloads 2 or 3 weeks after the preliminary announcement, because because they're attached to the process of generating the paper version of the annual accounts. And often, so we said, well, actually, you need to focus on, you know, you should focus on the preliminary announcement. So when the information is fresh.
Numbers without the numbers.
and so it comes to one of our underlying, I suppose, themes or questions, because a lot of regulation in terms of annual reporting is focused on making accessible the annual report through things like XBRL tagging. And there's a question that we have is that focus at the right point in time? Because is that too late? And actually, would the preliminary announcement be better or as well as tagging?
Okay. Next one is Dan.
Yeah, I guess just my thoughts on this when I just listening is one, I kind of want to follow up on what Dennis was saying about, you know, I think this needs to be a little bit more focused in terms of what do people want for the financial statements themselves versus what do people just want to see when they go to the company's web, because you know, it's a bit like you know, my 72-year-old father who uses a flip phone and a pager still going out and buying the latest iPhone. Financial reporting is so far, you know, behind in technology that jumping to virtual reality is so to me it seems like we're this is too broad, and you know, obviously being, you know, a heavy user of the footnotes would be a little bit biased, but I think starting with just simple things like, you know, Excel in the footnotes, every table being downloadable, you know, linking to different, you know, half the companies I look at don't even link the different sections of the financial statements. You know, stuff like that, I think. And then when you ask users what they want, ask them specifically for the financial statements versus, you know, do I want to be able to see a virtual tour when I go on the company's website? I think you're asking very different things. And then, you know, I would also just keep in mind that, you know, it just seems like we're very far behind. There are just some simple things that you could do, I think, that would significantly improve things.
Awesome.
So I have two comments. The second one is actually picking up from what Dan says. So let me start with the first is with this augmented reality. So people seem to read that as virtual reality. I think there is a difference to be struck. So virtual reality, I think I agree with a lot of the comments that I've made. I think augmented reality is a little bit different, right? So it's kind of taking a situation and giving additional information into that situation. And the only example I could come up with is a really silly one, but I'll give it anyways. Like, you're in a meeting with management or in a conference call with management, they're hooked up to a heart rate monitor. You can tell when they're a little bit stressed. That's augmented reality, right? So you've still got the benefit of that live interaction, but with a little bit more. So maybe it's something along the lines of, you know, a set of financial statements that you can drill down into a little bit more as well. So I think it's an interesting idea, but I don't think it's virtual reality. I think it's something a bit different, but I'm not sure what that different thing is, but it's worth exploring.
Pokemon Go.
That was a lot in the press at the time.
Yes, well, maybe that's what it meant. The second comment is about what Dan said about mainly jumping ahead, because I'm looking ahead to kind of next steps. And one of the things that you said earlier in the slides is, you know, PDFs are universal or pretty popular. But I think there's PDFs and there's PDFs. So there's PDFs that are like the extreme for some of the subsidiaries we look at, literally just scans.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with them. There's PDFs which are not, and they're searchable, but then there's PDFs that are very, very good links. And there's very few PDFs that I can use. I'm still very much a print guy, but there's some PDFs for some banks which are so well laid out with links back to a section and then links back to another section, so you can navigate around really well. So simple things like you were talking about being able to drill down is maybe one step beyond that, but just short, you seem to be, or maybe there's stages in this project, and stage one would be, we have PDFs, they're popular, let's think about recommendations to make them more, even more usable than they are today, which I think is, you know, a quick win. And then later on, you're talking about this augmented reality and other things.
Yes, so in our first project report, as well as thinking about concluding that PDFs were popular, we did make a number of comments in terms of to companies as to how we might improve. So some of the things that we were thinking about, including the bookmarks and the links. And actually, I suppose it came down to when companies were thinking about PDFs, they were thinking about them as a proxy for their paper document and thinking that everybody gets them and prints them out and then reads them in paper. But actually, the majority of the people that we spoke to who were looking at the PDFs were actually looking them on the screen. So a lot of it was about utilising the abilities that the digital format offers. So, quite simple things actually, things like, should it be portrait? Because the screens are not always, the screens are not portrait, the screens are landscape. Having excessive kind of columns, so you have to go scroll down and scroll up. The very, very simple things. And I guess what we're seeing is actually quite, we're beginning to see a number of UK companies have adopted some of those things. So, making the sort of landscape, thinking about the fact that they're gonna be consumed on screen, rather than as a printout.
Okay. Robert? So I want to actually address some of the why's not, and then maybe I've got some summaries about why. So why are spreadsheets not used? Well, the answer they're not used is because they're not in the same format. So it's really nice to download it. Then you spend as much time figuring out, because you're downloading it to put it in a model. You then have to sort of integrate it. So it's simpler. If you're gonna have to do a lot of work, it's simpler actually to print it, and I'll talk about not printing in a second. It's simpler to print it because you've got two. In my world, I've got two screens, a keyboard, and a piece of paper on the side, and I can take it off, and that's why I still print things. So the next comment, but by the way, I'll talk about reading in a second. I was going to capital IQ is going to come up. Why not use capital IQ, and why do you get used? And I'll give you a very simple answer to this one. When you have a few set of companies, that type of product is just too expensive. It's better off to pay somebody to do that sort of sensitivity, that sort of work yourself. And interesting, there's been a flip in the last month where because my client and its parent have consolidated some of the things, now there's a capital IQ fee that justifies buying the package and using that information selectively in a way that meets the disclosure. It's fair use, the purpose of it. But so some of these aggregate products are not used because they're very expensive. The importance of getting into the right format. You really, this argument of how do you get this into the model is really what you need to do, and there's a lot, and it's just, it's not really helping us get it into the model. Why is PDF used so much is because it is a very convenient way of getting the information. And to this point about if the PDF is structured well enough, you don't print. And in fact, if the layout is right, you may actually read it on the screen because the printer is at the other end of the hallway and it really is a pain in the rear end to go print it. Except when you're actually, so if they've given you a really complicated disclosure that you have to read five times, you're gonna print it, think about it, read it carefully. If it's well, clear, simple, you just print it on the screen, you don't bother reading. Encourage communications versus compliance or selling. And those are very important. A lot of the communication that goes out is selling the company versus communicating with the company. And a lot of the financial disclosure we now have as disclosure is compliance. So quick wins. Link back. Link back. Get the basic stuff right. A universal platform across the world for accessing information. Canada has a fabulous site for financial information. It is a PDF format. It does not include spreadsheets, but they have a fabulous thing. If you want company information in Canada, you go to one site, you go alphabetically, you find your company, and you get everything.
CDAR,
yeah. Fabulous. Unfortunately, CDAR doesn't require, there's no And I've never seen a scanned document in CDAR. They're all PDF printed, so they're searchable. It's a fabulous system. You know, at a base, we should have a global system, CDAR World, that does it for everybody. One site, everybody. The second thing we need is some sort of universal, and it doesn't matter what, but some sort of universal download format. There's an issue about whether it comes in the company's format or, and there is a role for aggregators to do it. I wanted to talk about something, since I'm going to just, there are limits to how much information will ever be prepared, because the reality is that companies, even companies who are trying to communicate, in the best of the world, it's a CV. It's honest, but it's putting the best foot forward. There are reasons why people are don't want to share information. My client is a private company, and they want to be a private company because they don't want to deal with the disclosure. They just don't have the people to deal with all the disclosure.
Do they have public bonds outstanding?
No, they don't. They only have
private.
They only have
private. All you want. You can sell bonds to the market.
Yeah.
You can have public
information. But in this particular, in this particular case, it's a private placement bond.
Fine.
That doesn't trade.
Fine. That's not a tradable security.
Yeah. And so.
But I bet the owners of the private placement have the right to get to the financial statements. So
absolutely.
I'm speaking out of turn, but I just wanted to clarify.
But to this point, they absolutely have access to they have a reporting package.
The stakeholders.
And there is a little bit of tolerance to other potential stakeholders. So for instance, you're not going to get if you're likely to be a purchaser of the bond, they wouldn't say no, you can't have the financial information. But if you are,
these companies are.
And I have to tell you, I'm wearing more than one hat. So I do credit analysis, but they also draft me into the investor relations. So I'm actually on the other side. I'm actually the guy. If you are a creditor, you're going to end up talking to me too. So I'm actually the other side of this, and I'm preparing the financial disclosures. I'm the one that's going to do a mind tour. I'm going to organize it for you. We arrange so the financial information is both informative and does not contain material information that's competitive. And we get into fights about what we will disclose, but there are ways of disclosing the information that you need to do your analysis without disclosing the information that their competitors shouldn't have. And it takes a little bit of work, but it's perfectly doable.
And it's just the sacrifice of the public securities.
Which we don't. My message to this, there are some real, the recommendation here is there are some real quick wins that need to be put in place on a global basis that's silly they haven't happened.
Yeah.
And the second piece is I think that the standard setters who aren't actually in here right now, there's a message for you need to pay attention to this because it's more than just the financial statements, it's global financial reporting. And I think as you go forward, you should think of this project as the entire information package, not just the financial statements. So we're talking about how do you do with company presentations, virtual videos, all of this stuff. This should be looked at globally. I'll stop there before
you. Just to assure you, we have our colleague on the taxonomy team next, Thomas, Andy Wood, and of course, Hack is over there next.
Sorry, I missed it. I was looking that way. Sorry, Hack. I apologize.
Okay.
Can
I?
I
think one of the it has been mentioned, if you look at the analyst and the investor community, there are some geeks that indeed. Have the capabilities and interests of not only analyzing companies, but also have like a software interest and picking up an XBRL file and finding a viewer, making connects. But this is awfully complicated. It's if you need the entire chain working before mass adoption, and I assure you that one of the key things here is coverage. If 20%, 30% of the companies have XBRL files on the website, there's no reason for an analyst to go over in the hassle of going to see whether his universe is sufficiently covered, you need a huge amount of coverage before there's like a reason to go through acquiring these new skills of getting the XBRL to communicate with your model. Now, this it's the fact that there the interest is there. Look at how many clients Capital IQ has, FactSet, Bloomberg. Those data, the fundamental data of those companies, is being bought for 20,000 euro a year. So the market, the demand is there, but it's just saying, okay, we stop at XBRL files on the website is not enough. There needs to be a decent solution in place, free for all, to interpret to make the link between XBRL and Excel for all those, because that's like the start point for many financial analysis. And you need to look at the entire chain before it will fly. So it's a major note.
Yeah, no, I think I'd certainly take the view that a global solution and there's a first mover disadvantage if you're a company, unless there is a wide enough population for you to look at. There's no points. I take those points. Obviously, time is coming to an end. So what I would say is, I would, if anybody would like to discuss in more detail, we're very happy and flexible at FRC to have Skype calls or come and meet you or host you in our office to talk in more detail. And it would be extremely, extremely useful for us to probe on some of these issues.
Okay. Mitch, and then Bertrand, and then Boro, and then we have to close this session.
Very quickly, just wanted to underscore the point that Robert made about this CDAR tool. It's the same with the SEC and Edgar, these kinds of things. We'd love to have something like that on a global basis or in Europe, where you can go and search companies' financials, over companies that are filing. I realize to get that done in Europe, the European Union probably won't exist anymore by the time they actually agree to it, but I think that's extremely important. And then on the vendors you talk about, I think they do serve a purpose, particularly in terms of S&P, Capital IQ, I think those are very useful in terms of for sector analysis and screening tools and things like that. But if you really want to drill down, obviously you need to, I think for my analysts, I want them to do it by hand, because that is how you get the feel and the character of a company, by actually, God knows what you discover, but it's by the act, and the act of going to the numbers and then putting them in the spreadsheet. That's just personal taste, but some sort of global listing of financial statements would be fantastic.
Bertrand?
Yes, to complement what was saying Martin about the attribute of easy access, what I understand is that when you introduce a new technology, you have to consider the cost, the direct cost, as also the indirect cost, which is the acquisition of the know-how, the time you spend to acquire this know-how, so that you don't have to disturb you to make other things. So don't have to waste our time. And also to be sure that the technology that may be chosen is new technology is there for a long time. It means that if there is a new choice of technology, to be careful that within the next 3 to 5 years, this technology will not be another one and will be replaced by the new technology. We see a lot of things emerging right now, and maybe there will be some choice to be made by the companies that introduce this technology, but for the user, it will be an issue to go that the technology will be there for sufficient time.
Coral?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I think that it is quite important to imagine what would be the future of cooperative voting, but at the same time, I think that there are some kind of layers of technologies so that you know, that the one technology may be that kind of bottleneck for the, or the kind of, you know, base for the other technology. So that the, probably that I believe that you better show some kind of roadmap how corporate reporting could evolve into the better communication. And the, you know, right now, this could be the have links to the primary financial statement. The, you know, we have the, I think that the current IFRS taxonomy is not enough to, or well designed to provide the right information. So that the, I think that they, as Dan or other people suggested, we have a lot more to be done before moving into the more, you know, more digital reporting like this.
Yes.
You know, that the, that is probably the reason why we are still sticking to the PDF type file information. But at the same time, that the, yeah, as far as the, if I were, you know, some kind of sector analyst type job, that the PDF might be enough. But when I was a strategist, I did a strategist type job, that I need to download so many types of information, which I cannot download it manually. So in that regard, that the, this kind of, you know, digitized information is very important to some types of users. Mm-hmm. And they are also the users of financial statements. So I believe that you should have that in mind.
Yeah, I think certainly the concept of a roadmap is definitely be helpful, and I appreciate there's quite a long way to go with what we already do before we get to the future. And so laying out some of those milestones and some of those practical steps,
yes.
Would certainly be helpful. So yeah, I'd certainly take that on board.
Okay, Thomas.
Yeah.